Lincoln Park Project from NPR News.
Hi, Rachel.
You guys, I'm just so glad to see you. I spent a week in Idaho all by myself. Well, not all by myself. I did have some family there. But whenever I would get a little lonely, I would just, like, go back and listen to a little segment that we call the most when all the producers get together and we all talk about stuff in the news, and it just made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. So, hi! Let's start the most! Kaylin Kenny, what you got?
I have a story here from Yahoo News, and the title is Stressed Singapore Hunts for Its Happiest Person. Apparently, people in Singapore are not happy. More than 90% of the population feel that life is stressful.
Because you can't throw gum on the street. They, like, hang you or something.
Apparently. I don't know. They're also worried about financial security and retirement, and they just don't think they have enough money to grow old, and that's really worrying them. So there's this guy, real name, Philip Mary. Chief executive of consulting firm Global Leadership Academy. He has been tasked with locating the cheeriest resident. So if you're a citizen age 18 years and above, you can be nominated for the title of the happiest person. Nominators should explain between 300 and 1,000 words why their nominee is a model of happiness. And if you are selected as the happiest person, you get to stay for a week at a free beach club. So far, there's been almost 60 nominations. So anyone out there in Singapore is listening, nominate your friends.
I should amend myself. They don't hang you if you throw gum on the sidewalk in Singapore. But you do remember that case where the guy got publicly flagged for doing so. It's strict rules there. It would stress me out, too. Ian.
Good morning. Welcome back, Rachel.
Thanks.
This is a most popular from Yahoo News. The headline, 1986 message in a bottle drifts 1,735 miles. 1,735 miles. So apparently in the Nelson Lagoon in western Alaska, people love combing the beach because stuff washes up there all the time. So this guy, Merle Brandel, is walking his dog and he finds a bottle with a message in it, opens it up. It reads, "This letter is part of our science project to study oceans and learn about people in distant lands. Please send the date and location of the bottle with your address. I will send you my picture and tell you when and where the bottle was placed in the ocean. Your friend, Emily Huang."
Your friend.
Yeah, that's how you sign letters. Also, SSS, sorry so sloppy. If you're in elementary school. So the guy finds it. He does some digging. Turns out Emily Huang is now a 30-year-old accountant living in Seattle. She was in fourth grade in 1986 when she threw this thing in the ocean, and it only now just washed up. And she says she doesn't remember sending the bottle, but she's getting a big kick out of it now.
Oh, that's a cute story.
I just looked it up. The police released message in a bottle in 83. Not 86, but just for the record.
No. The actual bottle was released.
I know. I was just saying that's probably where they got the idea there.
Ali, maybe you didn't understand the story. Maybe Ian needs to say it.
No, maybe I just like the police.
Rachel,
okay, you get to dive
in. I have a most, it's one of the most read at the BBC.com. This is about more in the saga of French President Nicolas Sarkozy. His former wife, you know, they just recently got divorced. Cecilia Cijanet Albanese. I don't know if I'm saying this right, but his former wife,
what
Cecilia.
Kind of accent was that?
I don't know. It's kind of, it's everything. It's the accent Rachel does when she doesn't know how to do the accent. She's remarried. She's found herself a public relations executive by the name of Richard Attias, and they got married here in New York, which is very exciting. There was a lot of press about the fact that Nicolas Sarkozy and his former wife, Cecilia, were big fans and still are of the old New York City. And so she and her new beau were wed. Where did they get married? The Rainbow Room, the 65th floor of the Rainbow Room. And they got married on Sunday night. Ceremony followed by cocktails and dinner. No further details released. But we send our congrats out to Cecilia Cijanet Albanese. I think that was a Spanish accent, so that's appropriate for the French story. Okay, Dan, save me from myself.
I'll see what I can do. Hey guys, we got a most emailed from New York Times technology section. How did your computer crash? Check the instant replay. It's about a new invention called the Replay Director, which is a program that's kind of like TiVo for your computer. And it keeps track of everything you're doing, everything on your screen, mouse clicks, keyboard strokes, and records everything so that when your computer crashes, it can sort of rewind and go back and figure out what happened. And this is apparently a huge boon for software designers because they spend a tremendous amount of time when they're trying to fix bugs just trying to recreate a problem so that they can observe it. So rather than actually fixing problems, they're spending half their time just trying to make the problem happen again so they can learn from it. So this is a product that's being marketed. It costs $50,000 for the program. But like Electronic Arts, they bought it and they said it's saving them a lot of money because they have these big-time software designer guys who are no longer wasting their time doing this basically grunt work. Mm-hmm. This program is designed to help them go back and find out where the problem started. So kind of interesting.
Very
new technology.
And we have one more most from Matt Martinez, also back.
Hi,
no,
Matt.
Lest we forget.
How are you? Well, I have one of the most emailed. Hi. I have one of the most emailed at npr.org right now. It's about binge drinking American college students in Italy. And this is how it goes. You're an American college student. You go study abroad in Italy, in Florence, Italy, perhaps. And you study and you drink a lot. And you stink up the already stinky American reputation. Sylvia Pagioli did the story. Here is her report from Florence, Italy.
It's Sunday night, 10 p.m., and peanut shells already carpet the floor of one of the dozens of pubs in the city center. Six American students are drinking mojitos. Here, €5 will buy you five drinks. Next day, at a nearby leather goods shop, saleswoman Letizia Biaggi has just cleaned up her sidewalk from the nightly detritus, plastic cups and empty bottles of vodka.
Perché nel loro paese non possono bere perché è proibito.
In their country, they can't drink so young. Here, even children are offered wine. But Italians go to those pubs only on weekends, Biaggi says, while the Americans are there every night. And then, she adds, they complain about Italian men seducing them. They go around in miniskirts up to here, half undressed. They get drunk. What do they expect? About 7,000 Americans study in Florence in some 40 study abroad programs, and 80% of them are women. American students here were affectionately dubbed the Mud Angels when they helped salvage endangered artworks after the destructive 1966 Florence flood. But lately, the American image has been tarnished. Graziano Cioni, the city councilman in charge of security, remembers when he found about 20 young women plastered drunk, out cold on the street at 4 a.m. What sticks out about the Americans, he says, is that so many are well-heeled young women, often seen vomiting on the side of the cobblestone streets. Cioni says binge drinking is starting to be a problem also with Italians, and he stresses it affects only 10% of the entire American student population here.
Cioè, fanno gruppo a sé stante.
But Americans do stick together. It is hard to see American students hanging out with Italian students. They are a clique, a close community.
You have this group of students who come, and they have great passion and enthusiasm.
Barry Hopwold lives and teaches in Florence.
And then they don't quite know what to do when they get here or where to go. The city is not open to them outside of their classrooms. It's a difficult city to get to know and to connect to.
Most of the students have never been out of their state before, and some of them turned the entire school semester into one long spring break. Italian bar owners have tapped into the big student market with special offers like Ladies' Night, while tour operators organize night-long pub crawls. Barry Hochwald.
Number one market in Florence is tourism, and the second is the American college student. And that's why both tourism and the American college student own Centro right now. They are the dominant factors in this historic center of the city. Florentines don't live here. It doesn't belong to them anymore, and they're resentful of that. And they should be.
As an alternative to pub crawls, Hochwell founded a program she calls Creative Campus at the Florence International Theater. The theme of the latest student-written performance was about stereotypes, like the American party girl and the Italian Latin lover.
All right. So whenever you're ready.
At a rehearsal, New Yorker Antonella Lentini and a young Florentine man were reciting their parts on stage.
In fact, many female students who study abroad fantasize of meeting a hot Italian man. And I can't help but wonder, is it our own fantasy that builds the chauvinism and stigmatism that we receive from some Italian men?
Ciao bella! Ciao baby!
Lentini says her scene was inspired by what she saw the first week she was in Florence.
After one of the experiences of seeing this American girl at Astor Cafe basically strip on the bar and like, my friends and I feel really embarrassed to be here and be American and kind of want to hide that we were American.
India Beale of North Carolina says it took a while to get used to Italian men ogling her on the street, but she admits the Italian language can be seductive.
In America, you're not going to have, you have guys like, hey, girl, you know, but for some reason, a romantic language like Italian, it sounds a little bit better than hey, girl, what's up, you know. They're acting like just like American guys, but the language makes it more entertaining, I think, for the female.
Drinking until the wee hours of the morning leaves many young women in Florence off guard and more vulnerable to sexual assault or even rape. City authorities have begun to crack down. They've imposed a 1 a.m. ban on serving alcohol in pubs. They've put closed-circuit TV cameras throughout the city center. And they're working more closely with administrators of study abroad programs to provide alternative activities for young students. Something like this performance at the Florence International Theater, where Jordan Classic of Nebraska plays tribute to Italian popular music.
Maddening crowds, we can sing in the glow of a star that I know of.
That was NPR's Silvia Pajoli reporting from Florence, Italy. You can get links to this and all the most stories you heard on today's show at npr.org/Bryant Park.